Have you ever been too afraid to do something, turned away from it, and then regretted it immediately once the opportunity was gone? Have you ever gone through a season in your life where you've lost sight of the faithfulness of God and been stuck trying to find hope by looking only at your difficult circumstances? I mean, some people here today will certainly have been through painful events that have made you question God and set you on a downward spiral, perhaps even ending up lying to yourself to try and make some kind of sense of your circumstance or to protect yourself from further harm. And those times can be hard, but I want to encourage you, if you're in any of those positions, keep going. Many of us have come through the other side and discovered a new understanding of God's faithfulness. Come out the other side with a stronger faith. For those who still feel like you're in that situation, keep going. We're all here with you. God is here with you. We have stories of his goodness and his faithfulness. I've got my eye on you. I've got my heart set on you. That is a word from God. And I've not really thought about it before, you know, but Numbers, the book of Numbers, it's quite dark. It doesn't make great reading, to be honest. If it were a film, it would be about a journey in the desert, quite a bleak journey, really, and interspersed with moments of real hopelessness, as the main characters in the story are frustrated again and again by the people that they are trying to lead. But perhaps the key turning point in the book, and it sits right in the center of the book physically as well, is chapters 13 and 14, when the 12 spies that they've sent out into the land that God has promised for them, they return and give their account. You have to excuse me, I don't have this in front of me, so I'll read it from the board with you. And this is 13:26 to 14 verse 4, if you want to follow along. It excludes verse 29, simply to fit the words on the screen at a decent size. So they came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert. And there they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. This is the account of the two spies first. "We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey." Milk and honey here just being a reference to the fact that the land is fertile. "Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there." What we know about the descendants of Anak is that those particular people were of a very significant stature, very powerful physically. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, and this is the account of the ten, "We can't attack these people. It's not possible. They're stronger than we are." And they spread amongst the Israelites a bad report about the land that they had explored. They said, "The land we've explored devours those living in it." It's a bit of an exaggeration. But what the meaning of what they're getting at is that basically, if we go there, we're going to die. "All the people we saw there are of great size." Notice that they say that all the people there are of great size, rather than just some of them. "We saw the Nephilim there." The descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. don't want to dwell on this too much, but by referencing the Nephilim here, they are, at this point, certainly are sort of a semi-mythical figure. They haven't been around since before the flood of Noah, probably thousands of years before. And this reference to the Nephilim directly is scaremongering for certain. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. In no uncertain terms, what follows on from this passage is that the Israelites side with the negative spies, and a rebellion springs up amongst the people, literally overnight. They speak about stoning their leader Moses and going back to Egypt. And honestly, in some ways, before we condemn this choice immediately, let's just put ourselves in their shoes for a moment. They are a group of people who have known nothing but slavery for generations. They've grown up as slaves, born to mothers and fathers who are slaves. They don't have a place to call home. They don't have the security of a city to hide in or put their families in or their children in. They don't see themselves as an army. They are a people on the run. They have never fought anyone. Their parents have never fought anyone. Imagine for a moment that that's you. Would you question the leadership of Moses? I don't know. It's a tough question. However, God's judgment on it is quite clear. He says in chapter 14 that they have treated him with contempt. They've treated his promise with contempt, because he's promised that land to them. But before we go there, let's just... Oh yes, we can read that bit. So that night, all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness." It's an important statement. "Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword?" It's almost like it's a done deal already. "Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Yeah. So just unpacking it a little bit, I see two things going on here. On one side, we see faith in God, in his promises, which leads to hope. And on the other side, we've got this fear of dying in this case. I mean, fear of anything is going to lead you down a dark path. But in this case, it's fear of dying which leads to rebellion. And we can see the duality there. "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." And the ten say, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." I think it's pretty clear. The only other thing that I would say here is that there are many attitudes that can lead to rebellion. Fear is not the only one. But there is only one route to hope, I believe, and that is through faith. If you're looking for hope, you have to have faith in something to bring it to you. If you don't have faith in something, I mean, it might be misplaced faith. You might put your faith in material things, but you have to have faith in something to have hope. If you're looking for hope today, you have to go through faith. The other thing that we see, the other way lens we can look through this duality, this two-sided argument, we've got truth versus lies. And whilst the two spies, Caleb and Joshua, they don't shy away from the facts. They give an honest report of what they saw, and that this leads to freedom. The listeners are under no illusions whatsoever. There's no narrative that's being tried to be pushed, and the Israelites are free then to make an honest response. I mean, the way they use that freedom isn't ideal, but truth leading to freedom is something we can see here, versus lies, the lies of the ten, well, the exaggerative language that they use leads to manipulation. They manipulate the rest of the Israelites into following them down their path of fear. And God's response to all this is to, well, firstly, he cuts out the cause of the rebellion by killing the 10 spies, which, I mean, he's God, he's allowed to do whatever he wants. But to the rest of the Israelites, he gives the things that they prophesied over themselves. They said, if only we'd died in Egypt, or if only we'd died in the wilderness. And he says, if that's what you are going to speak over yourself, then that's what I will give you. You have to remember this plays out over a lifetime for these people. They still loved, they still lived, they still played out their lives, all the highs and the lows. It just wasn't in the fullness of what God had for them. They sacrificed a part of it. Their inability to trust in God's faithfulness rather than their circumstances on that occasion resulted in them sacrificing a portion of their functional destiny. And this is really important because I think it's one of those timeless truths. It's just a fact. This is the way it works. A rule you can count on. Be careful about throwing out God's promises, whether they're ones that have been made directly to you, specifically for you, or whether it's one that you could say applies to all of God's people. Be careful about throwing them out. Be careful what you speak over yourself. Choose faith, choose trust. Reject fear and lies. Because if you don't, you may find yourself sacrificing a portion of what God had for you. You know, God made a covenant with his people, and he's made a covenant with you. He's made promises over you. And we need to come to a place where we can choose to trust in them. Let's just take a look at a few. These are very simple ones. I mean, ones that are very well known and apply quite broadly. I'll never leave you or forsake you. Deuteronomy 31 and Hebrews 13. If you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. Romans 10:9. For I know the plans that I have for you, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Jeremiah 29, verse 11. And, you know, there are a great number of these kinds of promises in the Bible, actually. Many hundreds of them relating to almost every aspect of our lives. But most of them have some kind of if statement attached to them. You have to trust in God. You have to put yourself underneath the banner of this promise. As I've said already, some people may have had some very specific promises that God has spoken over them. So how do we keep ourselves postured in a way to make the right choices, to decide every day to put yourself underneath those promises, to not reject them, to not fall out of sight of God's faithfulness to you, and end up in those difficult situations where we're paralyzed by fear or find ourselves in any other sort of downward spiral of wrong thinking. There's a choice for all of us every day to choose our mindset. A mindset of poverty or a mindset of promise. By that I mean saying to God, I see your faithfulness. I choose to trust in you and your promises over me. And that process, the process of choosing that, the process of choosing faith over fear, the process of choosing freedom over self-manipulation or lies, where we tell ourselves lies to make ourselves feel better. It's the process of doing that doesn't always look like strength. I don't want you to feel discouraged. The choosing of a promise mindset doesn't always look like you've got it all together. For example, if the Israelites had managed to get together and say, look, we're really scared about going into the promised land. What should we do? And instead of saying, let's stone our leaders and go back to Egypt, they'd said, let's turn to God and confess our fear. It would have turned out totally different. It wouldn't have looked like strength, them falling down in front of God and going, we're so scared, God. That's not strength, but it is the right choice. It's choosing to trust God and ask him for help. I think the outcome would have been totally different. And I feel like God has been speaking to us for a while, actually, about faithfulness. I don't know if anybody else feels the same way, or whether it's just been something that God is speaking to me about. But really, for the past maybe 3 or 4 months, I feel like the topic of faithfulness and God's goodness has come up again and again as we've been worshiping together and reading the Bible together. And Abby and I have been going on a similar sort of journey for a long time. But more specifically, recently, we've realized that the acknowledgement of God's promises over us and his covenant faithfulness to those promises it starts with gratitude, deep thankfulness, not just for what God has done, but for who he is and what he's doing right now, all the time. Because the most basic outworking of God's faithfulness to us is the gift of life. Even if everything else in your life is going wrong, he is there. He's sustaining your life by his very presence. So just indulge me for a second. If you feel comfortable, close your eyes. And just be conscious right now of your breathing. In and out because of his faithfulness. Think of the food you ate this morning and the way it sustains you. The whole realm of nature provided as an awe-inspiring backdrop for your story. Outside, the leaves are going yellow on the trees and brown and falling because God is not breaking his covenant with creation. This simple process, you can open your eyes now if you want. This simple process of being thankful for what you have, for what we have, in the most basic way, is a really easily accessible starting point for an upwelling of promise mentality within us and hope and trust. And it builds the more you do it. The more you do it, the more you are aware of the constancy of his blessing and presence around us. This sort of process of just saying to God, thank you for something very simple. It's all of a sudden you found that you've taken your eyes off your problems and challenges and you've noticed that God is real and that your perspective has changed. And I think this is something that the Israelites really struggled with in their time through the desert. Often their grumbling and their moaning began because they'd lost sight of the fact that the food they were eating was a blessing from God. it was a symbol of his faithfulness, and they'd just lost sight of it. We've been practicing being thankful as a family, our family. And when we ask Nathaniel what he's thankful for, and we try to do this as often as we can, his response is actually to look at the world around him. For him, it's not about what God can do for him, God's faithfulness, what he's thankful for. It's not about what God can do for him or will do for him in the future. I don't think he's aware of any promises that God has made him. He's not really got any huge challenges that he's looking for God to overcome. So he just looks around him and is thankful for the leaves on the trees. He's thankful for mummy and daddy. Usually it's the leaves on the trees. It's probably what he says most often. And I could dismiss that as a childish perspective, but I can't really, because every time we've talked about or sung about God's faithfulness, it's been in, you know, in this building. I've just felt God speak about leaves. It's like the leaves, and it took a while for me to remember that there's a book I read a while ago, a long time ago, called The Holy Wild, and it's a book about God's character and nature. There's a chapter about his faithfulness, and the title of that chapter is The Testimony of Leaves. And when I read it, it says that when considering God's faithfulness, we often make the mistake of measuring it through the big, exciting things that he's spoken about. I'm going to move on. Can you move that on one slide? Thanks. We make the mistake of measuring it through the big, exciting things that he's spoken about or that we expect him to do for us, when really the faithfulness of God is most profoundly displayed in the everyday run-of-the-mill. Things that might even be described as mundane or boring. The faithfulness of a husband caring for his wife over a lifetime doesn't look heroic every day. It's just constant. It's there all the time. Like the beating of your heart, the movement of the ocean, the turning of the seasons. It's all a picture of God's constant, unchanging, ever faithful, continuously giving gift. New green leaves on the trees every spring, reflecting the nature of God's faithfulness to us more clearly than any miraculous story of rescue. A child's perspective, but a true one. Our very living presence here today declares that God doesn't break his promises. And I've not chosen to focus on this aspect of Numbers today, but the big punchline in the book is, we saw in the video, was actually that as the Israelites, the new generation of Israelites, are camping on the plains of Moab, waiting to go into the promised land, they're still grumbling. They're still struggling to focus on the good things that God has given them and his promises over them. But God is out of sight, out of mind, intervening on their behalf, making even their enemies pronounce blessing after blessing after blessing over them. That's my God, and he never changes. I choose to believe that whatever the evidence worked out in my life, God is faithful and he's blessing me constantly. We're just going to finish, but one last thought. The book of Numbers, in the Jewish name for it is Bemidbar. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but I know what it means. It means in the desert. It's far more descriptive of the book than Numbers. In the desert is the name of the book, and the message of the book is don't fear. Trust God. He's faithful. In the desert, don't fear. Trust God. He is faithful. I've got my eye on you. I've got my heart set on you. Let's just finish. Let's finish together just by praying together. We're just going to get into small groups. Maybe turn just to the person next to you and make a two. Or maybe turn, if you can't make a two, make a three. And if you feel comfortable, pray together. And make your prayer like this. Say one thing that you're grateful to God for today. It can be really simple. And then share one thing maybe that you're looking to God's faithfulness for. Thank God for his faithfulness to you. And put your trust in that same faithfulness to fulfill your need.